It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
Welcome, everybody, to this week's Untold Story with Martha McCallum. I'm Martha McCallum, and I thank you for joining me. You know, we always try to use these opportunities on the Untold Story podcast to dig in to topics that sometimes are too difficult to sort of scratch the surface of in the format that we have on the show, and also to learn about the people behind these projects and these stories. So I'm going to jump right in. I'm really glad today to be joined by Deb O'Hara Ruskowski. She's the co-founder of Global Strategic Operatives, whose vision is the eradication of all forms of human trafficking, including sexual exploitation, labor trafficking, organ harvesting, by way of furthering education in the healthcare system. So that's a lot. That's complicated. Deb, welcome. It's good to have you here today.
Thanks so much for having me, Martha. Good to be here.
So, you know, I want to start. I met Deb very briefly right before Christmas at Cardinal Dolan's annual luncheon, which is a huge event in New York City. And you and your husband were being honored for the work that you have done at the intersection of the Catholic faith and your nursing background. And afterwards, we had a very quick discussion about your work in human trafficking, which is something that, you know, I just feel like people don't really understand. And I know I don't understand enough. So I asked you if you would talk to me in one of my podcasts and shed some more light on it. But before I turn it over and let you explain that, I just want people to understand a little bit more about your background. You're an RN, an MBA, MTS. You are a critical care nurse by training with an MBA and a master's in theology. So Deb is super smart. She has more hours in the day than any of us. And I'm just glad to be joined by you today. So Deb, how did you get into all of this work?
Sure. Thanks, Martha. I'm very humbled by that introduction, but I appreciate it. It is a topic that most people shy away from. And if there's nothing else better that I can do is to bring light to people to understand what's happening, that's the important thing. For background, yeah, you just shared my, you know, real educational background, but it was really almost 11 years ago that when my husband and I moved to New York from Boston, and mainly for his job. And I was finishing up my master's in theology in Boston. And so my last class, my professor said, I hear you're going to New York. And why, you know, now you have a master's in theology along with your other backgrounds. What are you going to do with it? And I said, I have no idea. But I do have a passion for healthcare, as you stated. I learned a few business skills along the way. And at this stage of my life, I have to have a purposeful, you know, faith component to whatever I do. And so he said, well, would you consider working in the area of human trafficking at the UN? And I just looked at him and said, wow, you know, that seems to, you know, encompass all three of my points of interest going forward. So that's how I got into it. But back then, Martha, it was just really, in some areas of the country and the world today, it still is, building awareness. And, you know, you can't believe how many people just aren't aware, or they think it's done in thousands of miles away and not in their own neighborhood. So really, just for context, let me give you just a couple of stats. I don't want to overwhelm anyone, but it used to be up until really September of this year, from 2018, we were using the statistic of 40 million people worldwide. Well, that estimation has now, from the State Department and the TIP report, Trafficking in Persons report, it has increased to 50 million. Now, try to wrap your head around that. It's hard to. 50 million people worldwide. And it's a very, and the reason for that increase, and without going into any political or religious reasons, it's really the border crisis, the Afghanistan crisis, the Ukraine war and crisis. It has all bumped everything up into the world of human trafficking. And we've said, we saw at the Ukraine borders, you know, the only people that beat the humanitarians are the human traffickers. And so that is really profound. It's a very lucrative business. I found as I was going around and, you know, learning from others, $150 billion a year. And that is out of the International Labor Organization's statistics. And the majority, yes, they are sexually exploited, and, you know, 72% of women and girls. And that's bad, but we tend to shy away from what's happening in the labor trafficking, as well as the organ trafficking that is really starting to explode even more with billions of dollars lucrative. It's one of those, it's, what do you do? You know, it gets so overwhelming. So in the beginning, I was just, I say just, but, you know, trying to raise awareness, making friends with survivors and Homeland Security and going around and teaching and going to universities and lots of different places, airlines and sports events and anything that we heard in the statistics of where it was really more profound. And during that phase, it really became so clear to me that we needed to focus. I mean, there are four P's that are affiliated with human trafficking, and it's prevention, protection, prosecution. And the fourth one that was just added recently in the last couple of years is partnerships. We can't do this alone. It's just too overwhelming. Mm-hmm. And so I was lucky enough to meet a man named Kevin Hyland. That's a person that you should definitely have sometime on your program. Very well known in the human trafficking industry, meaning if anyone's going to eradicate it, he will probably be one of the people involved to eradicate this horror. But he used to be the anti-slavery commissioner under Theresa May in the UK, worked in law enforcement, Scotland Yard, and just knows a boatload of knowledge. And he kind of took me under his wing and he really taught me so much. But he kept saying, Debs, you need to focus. You need to focus on policy. And I'd say, gosh, Kev, where do I start? Well, he helped me. We had an unbelievable event at the UN in 2018 with lots of industry leaders and member states. And it was a full day event, which is unusual at the UN. And we came down to law enforcement focus or healthcare. Well, I was biased, admittedly, because of my nursing background. However, I knew there needed to be a clinical paradigm shift in the healthcare system. I knew when I was a nurse in the ER and the ICU, we would see, you know, girls that were dressed as prostitutes and kind of roll our eyes and go, oh gosh, look at that. And now I'm teaching nurses, you need to think differently. And doctors and everyone in healthcare, you need to look at that girl or woman and say, who's making her dress like that? Who's making her take those drugs? And that's a real paradigm shift. So after that event in 2018, that's how Global Strategic Operatives was born, because we decided, based on studies, 88 to 92% of survivors all seek out medical care. And Martha, it can be for anything. We're talking beatings, broken bones, botched abortions, STDs, STIs. You know, this can be for anything. But we needed, you know, to really focus on healthcare because they're on the front line. If they don't identify them, and they're going to go right back into the life.
You know, it's so interesting. Healthcare. So you, in looking at a way to intercede, you're identifying that this is a place where they can get someone's attention outside of the trap that they are in, and that it was not being picked up on. And I just want to, there's a quote from some of your work from a woman named Jasmine Grace, and she said this: when I was with my trafficker, I went to hospitals, urgent care clinics, women's health centers, and private doctors. Not one time was I ever asked if I was okay. Most times the doc wouldn't even turn around and look at me.
Right, right. That is such a typical hospital visit, which is so sad. And that's what we're trying to change. If you think about in your own life, and going to the doctor's appointments we have in primary care, they're so busy. And now with the advent of this information systems and the computers and the workstations, they're all documenting and looking at right at the computer screen. And to really get someone to look you in the eye and really talk with you, it takes time. It takes time off their, you know, how many people they have to see per day. And they're so busy. But when I go in, and with a team, we have survivors and clinicians as part of Global Strategic Operatives. When we go in, we really try to help them with the red flags. And really, you need to look at, is a person sitting there with somebody else who's answering all the questions? And some of the nurses have asked me, well, how do you differentiate from a domestic violence? I said, and there are some ways. And we teach them trauma-informed care. And the quick answer to that is ask them what their address is. Most sex traffic victims cannot tell you what their address is. But the important thing is to get them away from that trafficker. And you have to involve security and know, and have your community resources available, because this is a dangerous situation. That trafficker, that's their bread and butter. They often have guns. They will do anything to protect their quote unquote commodity. That's their property. That's their income. This is how degrading, you know, human trafficking is, to stripping of a person of their human dignity. And so, as Pope Francis said, it's a tragedy against humanity and against human dignity. And so we're really trying to make a difference there. The red flags we go through, we teach them. We teach them how to take appropriate action within their community, shelters, and bring in the FBI, bring in Homeland Security, have them, you know, really create a relationship that's so important. And then we help them with their policy and protocol. And that was a big culmination of a lot of work this past September, where we were able to, after a research project of 10 different hospitals around the world, five in the US, five internationally, we took all the policies together and created the healthcare human trafficking policy for healthcare providers. And it sits right now with Dr. Tedros at the World Health Organization for approval, but a lot of people are already implementing it. It really helps them. And if people are a little confused about what do you mean by a policy? Well, when do you call Homeland Security? When do you call FBI versus, you know, your assistant DA that's local? And it goes through all those criteria. But I just like to mention, you can't continue identifying, teaching to identify, without realizing that that's going to increase numbers. Mm-hmm. And if you go to Homeland Security and say, hey, what do you need? We'd like to help. Their answer has repeatedly been, we need beds, beds, and more beds. And when I first started 10 years ago, there were only 6 beds in all of New England dedicated to human trafficking. And that's a travesty.
Where were they? They're in a hospital. I mean, what does that mean?
They were mostly anonymous, you know, and you keep them safe because you don't want to, you know, disclose where they are. But I can certainly tell you they were around the Boston area, but they could be in a little bit of a house, and they could be, they're not well marked. And that's why only certain people in the need to know basis know about it. Mm-hmm. But certainly the hospitals and the Homeland Security and the FBI, we all know where they are. And right now, I'm part of the Order of Malta, and they are a lay Catholic order. And we are engaging Pope Francis and all the bishops to please designate one former convent or former rectory, which is ideal. Mm-hmm. And we are working with one former rectory now in Massachusetts, and we've named it the O'Connell House after the priest that gave it to us. And it's 15 beds, and we are emulating it out of Metanoia Manor in Louisiana, started up by two priests, Father Jeffrey Bailly and Father Chuck Swanson. And I will tell you, they have one of the only juvenile human trafficking safe homes in Louisiana, in the country, actually. And they've had great results over the past 5 years. Why? They have what's called a sister model. I call it the secret sauce to success. They actually have beautiful Orthodox sisters living with the victims to be that loving, nurturing presence of a caregiver. And this has been very successful. And that's why we continue with global strategic operatives to train as many in the healthcare system as possible. But recognizing as they get trained and educated, it explodes more the need for more beds and healing and restoration. So we are embarking really on a very strategic plan to get more houses and with sisters, and have the right type of people to do a trauma-informed and victim-centric caregiving model. And we emulate it on the flagship of Metanoia Manor in Louisiana. That's why I think there's not many hours in the day for me, but
you're incredible, Deb. The Untold Story continues right after this.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Kilmeade. I want you to join me weekdays at 9 a.m. East as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and, of course, what you think.
Listen live or get the podcast now at BrianKilmeadeShow.com.
You know, you traveled on medical missions, Haiti for 20 years, the Philippines, Dominican Republic, Bosnia Herzegovina, working with crisis teams all over the world. So you've just done extraordinary work. But when I look at the United States, just for this purpose in this conversation today, when you describe, and trafficking, as I understand it, is someone who is basically enslaving, abusing another human being for either sex purpose, work purposes, or organs, as you pointed out, which is, I want to, you know, get your definition of what that looks like in a moment. But who is the typical, if there is one, trafficker?
That's a great question. And Martha, there really isn't a typical one, because this is a very organized crime. When they talk about the cartels on your news station, I mean, that's the tip of the iceberg. But there are layers and layers and layers, because it's lucrative. The drug trafficker, the weapons trafficker, well, they sell something once. They find human trafficking much more lucrative because you sell it over and over and over, your commodity, your person, until they're used up, which is very sad. But the typical trafficker, you know, there are different ways. Let me just give you two examples, the grooming process and the gorilla process. One that you mentioned, Jasmine, my dear friend over 10 years, and worked with her as a survivor and had her speak at the UN a couple of times as well. She was groomed. She was groomed in the sense of she met the guy at the bar, was very impressed through friends, mutual friends. So she thought this was a safe person to meet. And then he groomed her. She took him home to Thanksgiving dinner and introduced the family and Christmas and everything else. And then he started turning like, you know, I really want to marry you, but we need money faster. And when he proposed the trafficking, he didn't use the word trafficking, but, oh, it's a massage parlor and this is what you can do. It's in Hartford, Connecticut. And because she was from Boston, and she said, no, not a chance. Well, he worked on her a few more months and brought her to a house in a beautiful area of Boston, Chestnut Hill. No one would expect then right next door to them would be a house of traffickers and girls. And who was there but her girl, one of her best friends from high school? And they told her she better talk her into it. Otherwise, she could get beaten. So she said, look at all my Prada bags. Look at all my, you know, clothes. Look at all my shoes. It's really not that bad. Well, what, you know, young girl, vulnerable, you know, very vulnerable. And that's what they look for. They prey on. And so she tried it. And it took her 8 years to get out of it. And the reason, when the college students all said, well, Jasmine, why couldn't you just leave and run? Well, because he knew where her parents and brother lived. He would say, wouldn't it be sad if that house burnt down in the middle of the night and your parents and brother were in it? She said, don't touch my family. I'll do whatever you need. Don't leave my family out of this. So that spiraled into, you know, the control that they all want. The other way is a gorilla way. If they don't groom them and make them fall in love with them, well, the gorilla way is the beating. And we have another survivor that she was in Las Vegas and met at the bus station terminal. And when they missed their bus, they offered her a ride. And of course, the ride led to where she was, you know, trapped. And she wanted out, and she was a strong-willed girl, and they beat her into submission. It's very different. It's you hear the different stories, and it tears at your heartstrings, because there, by the grace of God, goes I say, you know, as my mother, I used to roll my eyes at her saying, but it's so true. And it crosses all socioeconomic lines. This is very critical for people to know, especially parents. You know, I tell students, whatever you do, do not put online, my parents are driving me crazy. They don't understand me, because they will.
Great advice.
And COVID increased sex trafficking enormously. But you had a question about organ trafficking. Ask me what you wanted.
Before I let you go, and I hope we can continue this conversation, but I just have two more questions for you. And one is about organ trafficking. Explain what's going on. You know, I've heard of this happening in China. Is it happening here as well?
It is, but you know, I get pushback in the medical world because they say, well, you know, we have great regulations on this. And yeah, you do. But you know, when you have 26,000 people on a wait list, that lends itself to corruption. Mm. So, you know, don't fool yourself that we are not involved in the organ trade. And especially, I hate to, you know, this would be a whole nother conversation, Martha, but when we get into euthanasia, death with dignity, all that, and they're pulling the plugs early, big red flags have to go out, go up in the people's heads, the doctors, the nurses, everybody that's involved, that what's going on could potentially be organ trafficking. Mm-hmm. And they want those organs. They are very lucrative. It is happening in China, lots in the surrogate pregnancy world. But I will tell you what happened in Haiti. I went to Haiti for 21 years as a nurse, and there's no separation of church and state. So we had to give reports to the archbishop from time to time on the hospital work. And one time I went to him and he looked terrible. I mean, I had my nurse hat on. I said, Your Eminence, are you okay? You really look pale and you don't look well. And he said, Deb, I'm okay physically, but I just came from a meeting in Port-au-Prince and they're taking the organs from the orphans. I said, oh, dear Lord. So the most common one is the kidney. So they'll go to the migrants. They'll go to the people and offer $150,000 for a kidney, but they never see that money. They get a fraction of it, maybe 5,000 or something, but then they've lost a kidney and they can always live without one. They are taking organs now that people aren't able to live with, or even eyes from children. This is horrible, but it is very lucrative, and it's a whole new bag of worms. And there are places, we talk about human trafficking, countries of origin, destination, and transit. So where they originate, where they go through, and where they end up. The United States, sadly, is all three. And so people really need to know that this is not just over in Russia or over in the Netherlands where it's legal for, you know, prostitution. And that's the other argument. We're trying very hard. The Nordic model is something that we go after. We don't prosecute the victims. We see the prostitutes as victims. And once you're really into this, you really see how they are victims. But go after the Johns and the pimps. They started in Sweden and they even shame them. They shame them in a public awareness and put their names out there who were arrested. And that curtailed their human trafficking. But the bottom line is, as a special rapporteur says all the time at the UN, if there was no demand, there'd be no trafficking. So we have to look at the demand and the prevention and what our kids are looking at and exposed to. And if we don't get it that right, it'll just continue, get worse.
So Deb, before I let you go, if anybody's listening to this, and there are a lot of people who will be listening to it, and they say, you know, what's something that I could do to help?
Please visit globalstrategicoperatives.org. That's our website. And we do have a special pull down on the O'Connell House. It is our first one getting started, and we sure are learning by our experiences. Mm. The Order of Malta also is helping us with their new Malta anti-human trafficking, and you could send donations to them. And that's the Order of Malta American Association, 1011 First Ave. Suite 1350, New York, New York, 10022. The easiest way, I think, would be just going on the website of GSO and giving that way. But, you know, the important thing is to learn about it, educate others in your own circle, as hard as that might be, and especially children, and watch out for your kids. Mm-hmm. And then the housing. I mean, if you can't directly be involved, which is, I understand that, support those that are really trying to get these people, these poor souls, the healing that they need to go from victim to survivor.
Well, Deb, you are a blessing to this mission, and I'm really grateful to you for spending some time talking with me today. And I hope we can all continue to learn more about this and to spot it in a more effective way to help people who are victims to all of this horrific trafficking that we see going on here and all around the world. So thank you so much, Deb O'Hara Ruskowski, and it's Global Strategic Operatives, GSO. Mm-hmm. If you go online, you can get some more information. But Deb, good luck to you. And we'll be praying for you.
Martha, may I just put one plug in?
Of course.
If any healthcare people are listening, and every one of you, no matter how large or small, need training, please go to the website, contact us, and we'd be happy to come out and provide the training. We only ask for a donation. We don't charge. If they have something in the budget, fine. But if not, we will not provide you training. Thank you, Martha.
Thank you so much, Deb. All the best. Take care.
Okay. Blessings to you, too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Untold Story with Martha McCallum. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Make sure to rate and review. For more podcasts, go to foxnewspodcast.com. Listen ad-free with the Fox News Podcast Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts. And Amazon Prime members can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network. Subscribe and listen to the Trey Gowdy Podcast. Former federal prosecutor and four-term U.S. congressman from South Carolina brings you a one-of-a-kind podcast. Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.